This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Joyce Owens returns to the podcast to continue a very important conversation about the value of architects. You may remember Joyce from episode 510, where we explored her full origin story and her work designing resilient homes in South Florida and sharing her expertise with the world to build a better profession. Today, we're going to take that conversation even further. With decades of experience and a clear, practical perspective, Joyce shares why architects must better communicate their value and how that shift can transform both our firms and the future of the profession. Joyce Owens, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be back.
It's great to have you back. I love talking with you. You and I are very aligned with our missions.
Yes.
I would say anybody who doesn't know Joyce should go back to episode 510 and listen to the full episode, because it's Joyce's entire origin story. And we talk about the importance of communicating your value as an expert, as an architect, in order to not only be more successful independently, but also to help the profession. So 510 is that episode. Today, we're going to dive even deeper into that. Joyce, to get started, I usually do origin stories. We already did that at 510. But I do want to set some context. I do, for anybody who's listening and doesn't know who you are, in order for us to have this conversation, I want to be able to have a little bit of background. So share who you are, where you are, what you do, and then we'll have a conversation about leadership and resiliency and all the good things that you're talking about right now.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Just a quick summary. I am Joyce Owens, FAIA. So I'm a fellow of the American Institute of Architects, and I'm also RIBA, Royal Institute of British Architects. And the reason I am RIBA is that I did go to London when I was very young, and I worked in London for 15 years. And I had the opportunity to become qualified there and become a member of the RIBA. So while I was in London, I had my own practice there. So I was there for 15 years, and I had my own practice for 10 of those years. It was a small design practice with incredible clients like Alexander McQueen and Vivienne Westwood, as well as the V&A Museum, and even the future Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. And so it was quite the ride. We were on a trajectory to greatness, and it was a great time and a lot of fun. But I decided I needed to come back to America. I was struggling with the gray climate, and I needed to come back to Florida. So I returned to Florida, where my family was living and where I had earned my license here in Florida. So I came to Florida back to the sunshine. And I am again the founder of another small firm in Southwest Florida. So we practice here. We do coastal architecture, and it's mostly working on the Gulf of Mexico. We do both high-end residential and commercial projects. The majority of them are on the beach. And so it's a whole different world. We deal with extreme regulations and extreme climate, humidity, heat, salt air, and of course the dreaded hurricanes. So those hurricanes made a huge difference to my practice back in 2022, when Hurricane Ian came through and devastated my community. At that point, I was very much involved with the AIA. I had gone from local to state AIA Florida president. I was working with the AIA at a national level, and I had to step down from a lot of my volunteer efforts to help rebuild my community. The good thing was the projects that we had done and worked on the beach had remained standing after the hurricane. And so that really put us in the spotlight and put a lot of attention on our firm and gave us the ability to communicate about why my buildings had survived on the beach and how we could help the community looking forward. How could they make their buildings resilient? So still today, I still do a lot of talks about resiliency and what was it that was making the difference. And so that is kind of me in a nutshell, as I'm very much a part of my community and trying to be out in the community and talking about architecture and what we're doing here. So not only is our work resilient, but we're trying to do good design as well.
And you're running for AIA National President for 2027, correct?
Yes, I am. I am very much running for the presidency. There are six of us running, so it's a crowded field. And I hope that the people that are in the position of voting will recognize that I have quite a lot of experience in many different fields. I'm not a one-trick pony. I have AI leadership, and I have practice experience. I have international experience. I have design experience. And I hope that all of this, you know, my decades of experience will resonate with people and allow me to serve my profession, because I am very passionate about my profession and I would love the opportunity to serve.
Yeah. For anybody who did listen to episode 510, you heard the passion that Joyce has, and you heard the entire climb to the national AIA and her work there. Joyce, now you're running for AIA National President. Why? What is your reason for doing that? It's a lot of work, big commitment. You're running your own firm very successfully. Why take on this commitment of AIA National President?
I think when I came back from England, I felt that architects there were respected. Just the entire profession was very well respected. And so when I returned to Southwest Florida, I didn't feel that same respect. I felt developers and builders were pretty much in charge. They were dictating not only design, but they were just dictating the profitability of our firms. And so I realized that I wanted to make a difference in my community. That's where I started. And so I began to write for the newspaper. I began talking to journalists, getting out and trying to advocate for my profession, which is why I then joined the AIA, because I realized it was a great platform, not only to meet other architects that had similar ideas to me, but also to get out and use the AIA as a platform to speak to the public. And so it's just snowballed from there, basically. And again, if I hadn't have stepped away for a minute, you know, it's been 3 years since the hurricane, you know, I probably would have just kept going in leadership in the AIA and maybe not run for president, but I definitely would have continued my journey on the public outreach committee there, which I feel is a very important committee in the AIA. And so I feel that architecture is not just about buildings, it's about communities and how we build our communities, how people live, how they function, how they live in their communities. And I don't think the public understands that. I don't think they have a big idea about what we do. And I think that is sort of my goal, is to educate the public about who we are and why we should be valued in our community. So I guess that's why I'm running. It is my lifelong mission, and whether I win or not, it will continue to be my mission. And so I really think I would like to bring that one step further.
Yeah, that word value is resonating throughout the profession, right? It's something that architects talk about all the time, that the public doesn't understand what we do and they don't value our services, and therefore we don't get paid the fees that we really need to get paid. Why do you think architects struggle so much with communicating their value in order for us to gain that respect?
Well, I think it's like business, okay, in architecture. We go to college, okay, we learn at university how to become an architect. You spend all that time learning how to design, and it is a gift, okay? My education is the most valuable thing I've ever had. And of course, like any architect and, or, you know, anyone that's been through architecture school, it changes you. It changes your perception of life, okay? And it's wonderful, but you don't get any business training. They give you professional practice, but that's not what you need. I mean, that's not the only thing you need. We definitely need professional practice, but we don't learn business. I had the great fortune of having my family run small businesses my entire life. And before I decided to become an architect, I did take some business classes, okay? I took accounting because I'm good at numbers. I thought, oh, maybe I'll do numbers. And I took a class in economics. And so I did have a basis for my being able to run a business and to manage people just because of my background, okay? But most architects don't get that training in school. And so I think that, like that, we also don't get training in marketing or communications. We don't know how to do it. And we certainly don't know the language that we need to use, because we're so used to speaking to each other and using words that talk about, we have our own vocabulary. And I have to say, I'm not very good at that vocabulary. I'm very down to earth the way I speak. And maybe my editor explained to me when I used to write for the paper, you need to be able to speak to a sixth grade education. And my son was in sixth grade at the time, so he would read all my articles to make sure they made sense to him. And so I think I have trained myself to make sure the language that I'm using is very down to earth, so that we can speak to the public very clearly about what we're doing, why we're doing it, why it will make their life better, and why they should pay for it, you know? And so it's a story that I want to tell, and I want architects to be able to tell themselves.
Yeah. And that's work that you've been doing your entire career. It's something that I do every week here at the podcast. And it's still, right, there's still that issue, right? And it becomes a primary issue in your candidacy. So how, as president, right, how can you leverage the power and the influence of the AIA National to have a bigger impact, and having that message be communicated to architects, and not only explain that that's something that's important, but actually help them execute on that?
Yeah, when I first got to national level, I think it was 2018, 19, I started getting involved with AI National. And I don't know, I guess, because I'm always asking questions, but I wasn't asked to go to national to do this public outreach thing. It was just my passion. And so I kept asking questions and I kept saying, what does the AIA do? I don't understand. And I learned that there were so many avenues that the AIA was pursuing to do this, that it would spread too thin. There were five different websites at that time that they showed me that were public outreach websites, okay? And they were trying to reach the public, but none of those you couldn't link to them from the AIA website, from the regular AIA website, nor did it say at the bottom, like, this is presented by the American Institute of Architects. There was no like link between these two. And I was like, well, that's not going to work. We have to make this a holistic approach. And then at the same time, while this was happening, as I joined, a group of like-minded architects were putting together a toolkit, okay? And this toolkit was presented right about the time I came out. And I was blown away by the toolkit. It was a wonderful, wonderful tool, beautifully presented. It was a brochure at that time. So it wasn't an online sort of thing, although you could find it online. But it was very well put together. And they brought it out and they presented it at a convention. And then you could ask AI National to present to you. They would come to you and present to you at, if you had a convention, they would do a talk for you or something about it. But I felt like it didn't get to go out as far. So when I got back on the national committee, I helped to bring it out again. Okay. Mark Levine and I were we were big advocates on this. And so we did a whole session about bringing this toolkit back out. Well, it's gone back in the dark. Okay. It needs to come back out, but it needs to come out in a different platform now.
Yeah.
We're not holding the brochures anymore, right? We're dealing with a younger membership and we have to do it online. We have to do it via podcasts. We have to do it in other ways to get this message out here. And I think that is definitely one of the things I would like to focus on while I'm a president is how do we communicate that? All of those things that were very clear then. And of course, that brochure is out of date too, you know? And so now it needs to be brought back into, you know, 2027, 2028. And as part of the new strategic plan that has just been ratified, okay, by the AIA, it needs to like tightly link with that strategic plan. So, which I think is very important.
What are some of the pieces of that toolkit that you find important and interesting?
Well, I think the toolkit now can be expanded to be more specific. For example, I think that in my part of the country, I'm doing resiliency, right? So maybe my climate is very specific, okay? Because I'm dealing with humidity and the salt air and all of those things. But the resiliency part of it, you know, is a valid topic that could reach all along the Gulf Coast of Mexico and all the way up the East Coast as well. Okay, so the resiliency part of that. And now I feel that this communication toolkit could be part of a bigger strategy to create toolkits for different regions of the country. So California, they need to deal with extreme flooding and fires out there. The Middle America has to deal with fires as well. You know, I mean, Hawaii, they've just been through a traumatic time with their fires. They just, it's like, it's incredible the stuff I hear. When I listen to the radio or watch television, you see and you learn about what architects are doing to make these communities more resilient. But I feel like the AIA could break it up into individual regions in our country. So not only would we be doing a marketing communication tool, but it could become a little bit more specific so that architects can talk about the things that they are doing. So not only would this toolkit be useful to architects to learn the strategies for how to make their practices more resilient in whatever climate they're in, but the toolkit could piggyback off of that as well. So I think that would be an amazing opportunity for the AI to sort of, again, use this new strategic plan, PACE, okay, practice, advocacy, climate, equity, and really focus in and, you know, use these toolkits as a way to get that message across.
Yeah. I love that. And I hope that that becomes a major part of your campaign and your platform, because the AIA for generations, actually for generations, they did nothing in terms of marketing and even advocating to architects to not market themselves. Today, clearly they are working very hard at trying to communicate the value of architects, but they do it from the top, right? They put together national commercials and often focus on very large firms. I love the idea of a grassroots campaign, giving individual architects the power and the tools to share their own story. Now you have 100,000 architects, individual architects, an army of architects out there telling their own individual stories building this campaign of what architects are and what we do, right?
Right.
Human talking to a human rather than a big organization talking to the air, right? And not having very much impact by doing that. So I love the idea of getting grassroots.
Yeah, or and having an architect that can speak to the public, say, you know, knows the words to use to explain what they're doing, which is, you know, of course that's going to add value, okay? I say to my clients, okay, when I'm doing houses on the beach, okay, some of those are luxury houses, okay? But I say to my clients, you don't want to build this way anymore. It's going to cost you 10% more to make your foundation stronger, but your home is going to be there. You know, I used to say 1,000 years, okay? Only because the Romans, okay, their concrete was really good and their buildings lasted 2,000 years.
Yeah,
so I used to say 1,000 years, but now I've realized our concrete isn't quite as good as their concrete, right? So maybe it won't be that long, but I think these houses will last a very long time and they're not going anywhere in a storm.
Yeah, I think many people remember when Hurricane Ian, right?
Yes.
When Hurricane Ian hit Southwest Florida, actually, which is where my parents have their house. Luckily, my parents' house had very little damage, but I've been down there right after the hurricane. And even today, you see the impact of the hurricane is still pretty devastating. But the iconic photo of the house standing among the wreckage, many of those photos were your projects, where your house was the one that was standing on the beach where all the other houses were gone or just piles of wreckage. And I think a lot of people remember those photos and they have a very big impact, right? That one picture says 1,000 words, right? It is a really important thing. And so that advocacy and being able to communicate the resiliency of architecture and the importance of architects in order to build buildings that retain value and can stand and withstand the impact of our environment is an important piece, right? It adds a lot of value to who we are as architects. The other thing that I think is important, and this is something that I advocate for over a decade now, is the importance of building strong, financially strong firms, businesses, right? And you've done that. And that's a big part of why you're successful and the things that you are. But how do you think that there's that link between being a financially successful firm, financially successful architects, and being able to communicate value with authority? Do you think there's a link there?
I do, very much so. And I think that it really is. Many times you hear from the various advisors we have out there, I'm going to say, okay, you and Brian McCarthy and Courtney, and you know, you guys are out there telling us we have to focus on what we do best, okay? We can't be generalists anymore. Once we know who we are as architects, once we've determined either what it is we want to do or where it is we can make the money, I think we need to like dig in to that and learn to explain that to the public. If you come to me to do a luxury home, you're going to get a very different result than if you go to the architect down the street that does healthcare, okay? Because architects can't do everything, even though we want to be able to say we can do everything. We can't, and maybe we can. But I think that once you understand your path forward, that's where you get the clients that you want and that you need and that will pay you to do what you do best. And so marketing is great to some degree, but really what we do is about reputation. And we get published regularly. I mean, all the time. All of our work is often in the local paper. It's put in lots of magazines around here, interior design magazines. But I always try, when they interview us, I always try to talk about the importance of designing for place. It's not about the pretty, you know, it's not about, oh, there's my blue sofa. I put a floral, you know, over here. I talk about why is that building important in that place. And so we have an interior design company as well now, okay, which is very successful. It adds to our profitability, but it also adds to the finished product that we're doing because we finish our projects. We're a one-stop shop now, and I love that we get to finish out the project without having to go back, explain to another person, another designer, what our goals are. Because in Southwest Florida, to me, our goals are about shade and ventilation. If you're on the beach, it's all about views, and it's always about that blurring the inside and the outside, allowing us, or either whether it's the way we live or if it's a commercial building, to be able to live inside and outside in this amazing climate. I mean, it's humid in the summer, but most of the year, it's pretty amazing to be able to live in a climate like this. And so that ability to finish the project is wonderful. So when I talk to people about whatever it is, first I talk about why it's designed like this. It might be the foundations. It might be the way the roof is attached, but it's also about where the windows are placed. How do we get our cross ventilations? Why are the overhangs doing what they're doing? Because I'm a firm believer in bringing the daylight in and keeping the sunlight out. You know, we don't want direct sun. It's too hot here. And so every single place in the country has a way that they need to be able to speak about their designs. And so I feel very fortunate, you know, that I get to do that.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health, building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect to learn more. That's WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the Resources tab, or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
You had talked about target market, and I think that's so important, as you know. I think when folks like that, or architects, so want to be generalist, and when you do focus on a target market, it allows you to specialize in one thing and become a very good at it, right? And you become an expert, right? And then now you have an expertise in that one thing that then leads to people knowing you for that expertise. It allows you to talk about that expertise and to advocate for that expertise, which then leads to money, right? Because you are focused, because you're the expert, people come to you and want to work with you, your fees can be higher. Yeah. So there's a direct link.
There is a direct link. And because I was talking about, long before the hurricanes, I was talking about resiliency on the beach for the residential projects we were doing. When the hurricane came and one of the resorts. It was a 1940s resort, and it was all, you know, wood pilings, low to the ground, and it got washed away, literally got washed away into the mangroves. The client came to me because he knew that I was resiliency. Resiliency was part of what we did because I had talked about it before. And we got to do the resort. It ended up being a nearly $20 million project on the resort. And you know what? It wasn't hard to design that building. It wasn't something that was in my wheelhouse, but I used all the fundamental principles that I had learned over the decades in doing my residential work right on the beach. And so if you look at that project today, it's all designed the same so that it's designed with nature, so that the water flows underneath. It's strong. It's not a piling building. Okay. The pilings are down below the grade and it's all built up on shear walls so that water can flow through and underneath. So it was an easy transition to be able to go from doing, you know, a residential project to doing a resort. I didn't say I wasn't advertising I could do resorts. That wasn't where my vocabulary was or what I was asking to do. I always wanted to do commercial work as well, but I would always say we do high-end luxury homes on the beach and we do commercial work. But the commercial work that we were getting was always a one-off. It was always a very interesting design problem. So we've done a turtle rehabilitation center since the storm, okay, where they look after turtles at the local wildlife rehabilitation center on Sanibel Island. And we've done a beer garden downtown with containers, okay. What do these have to do with resiliency? I don't know. But we got a reputation for being a good design, great problem solver, and our building stood up in this climate. And so we're getting to do some really interesting projects now that aren't just residents.
That's very, very interesting because you focused on resiliency.
Yeah.
Right. And the resiliency became your target market. And you went from doing these high-end residential homes on the beach, and that was all you did, to now expanding to doing many different types of architecture. Some might say sort of a generalist portfolio, but what they have in common is that they're all resilient projects, right? And so now you've become this expert of being a resilient architect or an architect who designs resilient buildings. And now you're an expert in being able to design resilient buildings for any type of project.
Correct.
That allows you to expand and do more different types of projects.
Yeah.
And still be targeted.
Right. Exactly. I mean, we do a lot of high-end like office renovations as well, which perfectly like, you know, falls into the interior design company as well, because the two companies are separate, right? So one is services. So we do interior architecture. And then separately, we do interior design, which is a service. I mean, that is a retail business, right? So we're doing a traditional interior design company as a retail business. And then all of the work that we're doing, architecture and interior architecture, you know, doing, you know, whatever they are, spaces and bathrooms and kitchens, all of that is done through the interior architecture under the umbrella of the architecture firm. And so, yeah, it's working. I mean, it's definitely working. Okay.
Yeah. I love it. I'm super excited that you are running for AIA National President. You're a fantastic candidate for it because not only do you talk about these things, you're doing it.
Yeah.
You've built strong business. You've advocated for architecture. You've given back to the community. You've given back to the profession. And so I'm really excited about your run.
Thank you.
What would you say is the one thing that architects should be thinking about when they look at all those different candidates that may be running for national president and your name is there? What do you want them to remember?
I think I would like them to remember my passion for what I want to do and my willingness to serve. I think as a candidate in a crowded field, I feel that I'm very qualified on so many levels because I've served the AIA, because I have my own practice. I've had two practices, in fact, which both were very successful. Okay. So I do have this idea of communicating and advocating for the profession always. I know the Institute, you know, all the way up from ground up, all the way to national level. And I feel like I know the people, the leaders that are there already. And I think that would give me a good head start. I don't have to learn the Institute. I know the Institute. And I firmly believe that The AI has to be a forward-looking profession, and it's so critical to advancing our field. We have to reach out to our young people, and we have to have them tell us what we need to be doing, okay? I know how to put a brochure together about the toolkit for learning about communicating the value, but what I don't know the best way is, what's the best way to start a podcast, you know, to get that idea out there now? How's the best way to communicate over the internet, through social media, about the value of who we are as architects and how architects must lead our profession? And so I want to reach out and ask the questions to young people about, who are you? What do you need? I have a son that's 30 years old. He's my sounding board, okay? He's the one that was 6. Now he's 30. He's still my sounding board. And I say to him, I've been asking him advice about my candidacy. What do I do here? How should I do that? Don't do that, Mom. Don't do that. You know, do it this way. Try this. And so in the same way, I've always reached out to young people. I firmly believe in, you know, looking after the young in our profession because they need to lead us forward. And I want to listen and I want to learn from them. So I feel I am a great consensus person. I am very easy to get along with, and I love hearing people's opinions. And I'm also very good at seeing the end game. I'm very good at filtering and finding the end. That's, I always call it my superpower in my practice. To my staff, I always say, I see the project, we design it, I see how to get there. And it is a superpower. And I feel that it's a big strength of leadership.
Yeah. Is there a good place where listeners can go to learn more about you and your candidacy?
Oh, I put together a website so you can learn a lot about me and who I am. It's called JoyceOwens4AIA.com. And you can learn a lot more about me. And I think I've tried to filter this website so you can see. I've divided it up on one of the pages. I think it's the bio page. It's divided into design leadership and AIA leadership, public leadership, professional leadership. So you can see all of those pieces of who I am and the leadership role I've had, both in my community and in my state as AI Florida president, and then again at national level.
All right. So Joyce Owens for AIA, JoyceOwens4AIA.com is that website. All right. Before we wrap up, final question. I asked you this last time, but I'm going to ask it again. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'm going to give you the same answer I gave last time. Tell your story and know how to tell your story. Learn how to speak, whether it's speaking in public or speaking in words, whether it's through your social media, going on, you know, podcasts. Just tell your story, because your story is different from every other firm's story. Each one of us has a unique practice or a unique career, because it's not always about practice. I mean, many of us, you know, don't even get licensed, but we still have a great career in architecture. And maybe you're working for the government, or maybe you're working in education, you know, maybe you're a civic leader, or you're working, you know, so many different careers that architects take, you know, construction, project management. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome that architects can be at the table everywhere. And just learn how to tell your story. And it's important. It's very important. You don't have to be afraid of it, because what I'm amazed is all of my friends that are not architects, they never get tired of me. I tell my story all the time because I'm out there trying to advocate for the profession. And they're just always amazed that there's something else that they can learn about, not just me, but about my profession. And so I think it's really important that we do tell, each one of us tells our story.
Joyce Owens is her name. She is FAIA and RIBA. If you'd like to check out her architecture firm, it is architecturejoyceowens.com. That's the name of the firm, Architecture Joyce Owens. The interior studio is Studio AJO. And again, the website for the candidacy is joyceowens4aia.com. We'll have links to all of that on the show notes. So you can just go to the show notes for this episode and you'll have links there. Joyce, thank you. Oh my goodness. For all of your dedication to our profession.
Thank you.
To doing the work that you've done throughout the years, to making a difference, to showing us how to do it, not only, you know, giving us direction on how to do it, but doing it yourself as an example, as a role model. So thank you for that. And thanks for coming by here and joining us and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Yes, thank you, Mark. I'm so glad our stars are aligned on this subject, and because what you do is very, you know, varied, but I know that one thing, we definitely have that in common, and I'm very grateful that you feel as passionately about it as I do. So thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you when you come down here on your next visit.
Yeah, we should do that. We should connect next time I'm down there, for sure. I love it down there. I'll be down there again next winter, so we'll make that happen.
I'll show you some projects.
I would love that. We'll do that.
Great. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entree Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entree Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.